Everyone, this is B Jamine, aka the Terrible Aussie, and welcome back to the second edition of my 2022 Melbourne International Film Festival audio reviews. Apologies for the lateness of this one. I've just been so caught up with the film festival over the last few days since the previous audio reviews posted. So I'm back now with a brand new one, and I promise more will be coming over in the next few days, so stay tuned for those. But in the meantime, though, let's get straight to it and talk about the next four films that I saw at MIFF this year. And that, of course, are the films Sissy, Godland, War Pony, and Funny Pages. So let's get right to it with the very first film, which, of course, is the Australian horror comedy Sissy, which was directed by Kane Sinez and Hannah Barlow. And the plot summary for this one, which I am reading off the MIFF program guide, is as follows. As children, Cecilia and Emma swore that they'd be friends forever, until third wheel Alex entered the picture to full frenemy effect, provoking a falling out that has tainted the intervening years. Now a popular Instagram wellness influencer, Cecilia reconnects with Emma, who has invited her to a hen's weekend at a secluded country house, which just happens to belong to Alex. As passive aggressiveness morphs into outright aggression, the weekend spirals into algorithm-breaking Insta carnage. Now, as anyone who knows me knows, I am a huge fan of both horror films and Australian films, and particularly when both of these things can combine together as well. So I'm a huge fan of Australian horror. So when I knew that the film Sissy, which I had heard nothing but really good things about since it played at a film festival earlier this year, I was definitely looking forward to checking it out. And when MIFF announced it as part of their lineup, I definitely add that to my viewing list for sure. And I didn't know what to expect. Like, I knew it was about an influencer, like influencers. So that was kind of the only really little thing I knew about the film. Because for a lot of the films I go into with MIFF, I always try to go in knowing as little as possible so that when I'm watching the films, I'm always surprised about what I'm watching. And going into Sissy, like I said, I only just knew it was about an influencer and that was pretty much it, and that it was a horror comedy. Now, having seen it, what did I think of Sissy? I gotta say, I really enjoyed this film a lot. Like, it's definitely, the thing I found funny about this film is, like, even though it does satirize, like, the Instagram influencer movement that's going on in the world right now, but it only plays a small part of what this film is. Like, I honestly assumed that the sort of the influencer aspect would be like a huge big thing that the film would explore, but if anything, it's kind of only just a small aspect of a much larger story. Because what I think is interesting about Sissy is that it's a film that deals with the subject of bullying. Because we have the character of Sissy, or Cecilia as she prefers to be known now, who's in the film is played by Aisha Dee. Like, we know that she is trying to better herself as a person, and then once she randomly runs into her old school friend Emma, that's when, like, since but we know that from the very beginning, just based on previous archival video footage, that these two were best friends as children, but we don't know exactly what happened to them at first until, of course, as the film progresses, we learn a bit more about them, particularly with the character of Alex, who sort of came into their friendship and pretty much stole Emma away. And then, of course, something bad happened that has kind of tainted the friendship for good. And now, as Sissy and Emma reconnect, Sissy kind of feels like, oh, she's getting her best friend back. But then once again she meets Alex during the hen's weekend, that's when things start escalating from there. And I think what's interesting about this film, like I said, is how it sort of deals with the topic of bullying. Because the way on how Alex was very much a bully towards Sissy, and but where it sort of but how it explores it is quite interesting, because I think it takes a very interesting approach to the form of bullying. Because even though the film kind of shows how much of a bully the character of Alex was as a child, but what happened to her where during this accident that Sissy caused, like, Alex has a lot of resentment towards Sissy. And at the same time, we can kind of get why Alex is this way towards her. So we sympathize, empathize with Alex on that front. But at the same time, though, the film never really tells us to condone like the actions that Alex did as a child towards Sissy. But then, of course, Sissy, as the film progresses, she starts to feel that sort of bullying feeling again. And of course, things kind of spiral from there. And I think it's just an interesting film that's, I mean, it's very funny, it's very entertaining. It's a lot of the humor is very dark, but it's the good kind of dark where it's very twisted and just very much right up my alley. And it has some really cool gore moments as well. Like, it's not a full-on gory film, but when the gore does hit, it does come across as quite gruesome at times. And it's a movie that has a lot to say about bullying and also being an influencer. Like, it's a film that kind of tackles all these different themes, but does it in an interesting way that actually makes it far more nuanced and complicated than a film like this usually would, especially with the bullying aspect, because we kind of empathize with both Sissy and Alex in regards on their relate on how they feel about each other, what the other has done to them, and we can kind of get it as well. And this to me is what's very interesting about the film. I could definitely see some people kind of feeling that, the way how the film approaches its themes and messages might be rather a mixed bag or quite unsure of itself. But for me, that's kind of what makes the film like an overall interesting watch, is how it kind of doesn't really have a straight-laced answer to these themes, like who's right, who's wrong. Like, it doesn't in a much more nuanced way, which I actually kind of appreciate. But I could definitely see some people kind of not vibing with the film in that regard, or feeling that it could have gone with its themes a little bit more. But I still quite enjoyed the film nonetheless. And of course, Aisha Dee, who I recently talked about on by other on the podcast, Podcasters of Horror, because she was in the second season of the show Channel Zero, No End House. She was a major star in that series. So it was really cool to kind of see her in this film. And what I sort of found out in that podcast is that I didn't realize Aisha Dee was actually an Aussie. So getting to hear her with her natural Australian accent was really cool. But that being said, though, she is great in this film. I really enjoyed her performance. And she brings a lot of interesting layers to the character of Sissy that makes her such a sympathetic figure, but also quite terrifying as well, like as the film progresses. But we can kind of see what is going on in her head. And I think that's what this film does pretty well, is diving into the psychological aspect of Sissy and how everything that happens to her within the story affects her. But yeah, I really enjoyed this one a lot. I'd be kind of curious to hear what other people think of it. It might be maybe a little too broad of a film for most people, particularly people who love horror comedies. But overall, I really enjoyed this one a lot, and I definitely say it's worth checking out for sure. And I think Kane Cines and Hannah Barlow, if I butchered anyone's names, please forgive me, do a really good job at handling both the horror and the comedy of this film. Like, it definitely is a bit more comedy than horror, but I think they find a good balance with keeping that tone consistent throughout. So if I had to give Sissy a rating, I give it a solid 3.5 out of 5. I really enjoyed this one a lot, and it is coming to cinemas here in Australia very soon, but it's also going to be playing Shudder in some parts of the world as well. So once it comes out, definitely seek it out for sure. Now, next up is the Danish period drama Godland. This film was directed by Hymir Palmason, and if I butchered your name, please forgive me. And the plot summary for this one, which I am reading off the Myth Program Guide, is as follows. Lucas, a young Lutheran priest from Denmark, travels to Iceland to oversee the building of a new parish in a remote coastal town. His interest in the landscape and its people, he carries cumbersome photographic material with him to record what he sees, wanes as the journey across the terrain becomes more and more treacherous. An antagonistic relationship with his tough Icelandic guide then challenges the arrogant priest's increasingly deluded views, but it's beauty and terror of the natural world that cause the greatest spiritual disruption. Now, I wasn't sure what to expect when I went to go see Godland. One of the things I think what drew me to check out this film was when I sort of looked at it in the MIF program guide is that it kind of got compared to other films that I really loved, which were Silence, the Martin Scorsese film, and Paul Schrader's First Reformed. Now, I loved both those films, and those films in those particular years when they were released were my number one and number two films of those years, respectively. So when I heard that this film was kind of compared to those ones, I definitely was very intrigued to check it out. And of course, I knew a few people who had seen this film also, who also gave it quite a lot of positive buzz as well. So I was definitely intrigued to see what I would think of it as myself. One of the things I will say about this film is that it is quite a long film. It's about almost 2.5 hours long. So if you're someone who doesn't really like long films, definitely be prepared for this one. And also one of the interesting things about this film is that it was shot in the Academy ratio. So basically, in a way, like it's got the 4x3 box format, but the way how it's kind of shown here is that it's kind of done like it's shot like the kind of the photographs that the priest Lucas shoots with his camera. So it has that kind of sort of how it's framed. So every shot in the film kind of looks like a photograph. And I got to tell you right now, this is one gorgeous film. Like I think the overall film is great. I really liked it a lot. But I will say this though, this is definitely one of the most beautiful looking films I've seen so far this year. Like the cinematography in this film is just so absolutely breathtaking and beautiful. Like for the first half of the film, we kind of go on this journey with the character of Lucas and also his Icelandic guide and also a few other people who are going to this parish. We go on their journey as they're going across the land, and this entire section was definitely the most interesting to me because I just loved the landscape of this film, and it's just so beautiful to watch. And also being that I'm someone who enjoys, kind of, survival stories as well, we get to see as these characters kind of like, especially with Lucas, being that he's come to this land, going on this journey across. Going on this journey and how the harshness of the terrain starts to affect him emotionally and psychologically, and just how beaten down he gets as the film progresses. Like to me, the first half of this film was just that compelling because of that reason, and I was just completely riveted by it the entire time. But then once they get to the parish, which is kind of the main focus of the second half of the film, I didn't feel like it was quite as interesting as the first half because I really enjoyed the stuff when they traveled across the terrain. But for that being said, though, the second half is still quite compelling, especially with how the character of Lucas deals with the small town that he set up his church in, and how they sort of feel about him, and how it kind of changes his views on a few things. And the film kind of deals with a lot of interesting and complex themes in the second half that I thought were quite well done and quite riveting to watch as well. But that being said, though, like I said, it's really that first half that really got to me because the cinematography, and I hate to keep coming back to the cinematography because this is one gorgeous looking film, is just so beautiful. And it's definitely, out of all the films I've seen so far from MIFF this year, this is definitely the one I would say had the best cinematography overall. It's just such an amazingly shot film. But that being said, though, as a film overall, it is still pretty riveting. It has deals with a lot of interesting and complex themes within its story, and I like that the director, who I'm not going to say whose name I'm not going to say again in case I butcher it, does a really great job in how he tackles the themes of this story. And I think it's just a really well done film. And also the actor who plays Lucas, who I am finding out is played by Elliot Crossett Hove. Now, if I butchered your name, please forgive me. Like, I think his performance is great, and it's definitely a very interesting and complex character that he plays in the character of Father Lucas. And I think it's such an interesting film because I will say this though, compared to something like both Silence and First Reformed, like I feel like those films kind of tackle their subject matters, particularly with religion and spirituality, in a very interesting way. And to me, those were kind of that was the driving force of both those films was religion. And even though that is kind of tackled here in this film, I didn't feel like it was tackled as much to my liking, because I feel like that the way how it sort of tackles religion and spirituality is only just a small part of on many other themes that this film is exploring within its story. And which I kind of would like to have seen more of that. But that being said, though, this film kind of deals with so many different complex themes that it didn't bother me too much, because there is so much interesting stuff within this film and what it touches on. And I think the film does a really good job at tackling all these different themes in a very compelling way, at least for me as a viewer. I could definitely see some people not really enjoying this film as much, mainly because, like I said before, it is a nearly 2.5 hour film, and it's also a very deliberately paced film as well. Because especially in the first half, that it takes its time to get going, and since there's a lot of long stretches where you just see characters travel across the land, some people could be bored by that. But for me personally, I found it quite an immersive experience from start to finish. So it didn't really bother me that much. And I could definitely see some people being just putting off by the slowness of it. But for me, it just was compelling for me as a viewer. So yeah, overall, I really enjoyed Godland a lot. I would say more engaged by Godland a lot. I think it's a really compelling film, quite riveting, and just an absolutely beautifully stunning film on a cinematography level. And it's also got a lot of really strong performances in it as well. It's really compelling stuff. And it makes me want to check out the director's previous films as well, because I've heard a lot of interesting things about those ones as well. So I'll definitely check those ones out in the future. So if I had to give Godland a rating, I give it a solid 4 out of 5. I really like the film a lot. Now, moving on to my third film, which of course is the coming of age drama War Pony. And this one was directed by Riley Keough and Gina Garmel. And the plot summary for this one, which I'm reading once again off the MIFF program guide, is as follows. On South Dakota's Pine Ridge Reservation, charismatic 20-something Bill is a rudderless, an entrepreneur, doing his best to stay afloat in order to win back his girlfriend and support his growing family. To raise some much-needed cash, he ventures into breeding poodles and takes work off reservation with a local wealthy rancher. Meanwhile, sweet, bookish 12-year-old Mafo is forced to grow up faster than he can handle when his father abandons him, leaving him to make his own way in life. The two youngsters' paths barely cross, but we witness their parallel trajectories, sharing in their humor, hardships, aspirations, and joys. Now, I got to admit, one of the key things that made me very interested to check out War Pony at MIFF was, well, that and also I didn't realize this film was playing at MIFF. I heard about it when it played at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year. So I put it in a mental note to sort of keep a lookout for it in the future, because it did sound very interesting. And so when I discovered that this was playing at MIFF, I definitely put it on my viewing list for sure. But I got to admit, one of the main reasons I was very intrigued to check this film out is because it's the co-directorial debut of actress Riley Keough. And of course, anyone out there who knows Riley Keough, she's a great actress who has starred in so many fantastic films over the last few years, from Mad Max Fury Road to Logan Lucky, The House That Jack Built, American Honey, and so many others. She is a wonderful actress, and she's always great in every film that she is. So when I heard that she teamed up with Gina Garmel, who's a longtime friend of hers, to direct a film with a cast that's entirely from the Oglala Lakota community, I was very intrigued to see how they would do this film, but especially since this is a film that's pretty much, I would say 98% of its cast is people who are from the Oglala Lakota community. So, which I think is a really great thing, because as well, since this is a film that they were also very much a part of in its creation, and they're getting to tell their story. And That being said, though, I was kind of curious to see how Riley Keough how she would do as a director. I mean, she's a wonderful actress, but how would she do as a filmmaker? And I got to say, I think she and Gina Garmel have both got great directing chops. Like, this is a really well-made film. Like, it's very confidently made. It's very compelling, and I like that. That despite the sort of the contrivances within the story, because there are definitely some elements of the plot that are very familiar and we've kind of seen before, and way how the sort of the story is crafted on a script level, you kind of already know exactly where some of the plot threads are going to go. But that being said, though, Riley Keough and Gina Garmel, they do such a great job at grounding the story and making it feel very authentic as well. So it doesn't feel like an artificial film at all. It doesn't feel very Hollywoodized. In a lot of ways, I could definitely see that someone like Chloe Zhao, the Oscar-winning director behind Nomadland and The Rider, would have been a very big influence in the way on how they approach both the visual, the tone, and just the story aspects of this film, because it feels, like I said, very believable and authentic. And I think having the cast, who are all just fantastic in their roles, who are primary actors, like unknowns and first-time actors who are from the Oglala Lakota community, definitely again adds a much more authentic feel to the film. And I think everyone does such a great job in the film, and but particularly the two main actors, who of course play the roles of Bill and Matho, who are played by, and if I butchered their names, please forgive me, Jojo Baptiste Whiting and LaDainian Crazy Funder. Like, I think both these young actors are great. They really, like, this is their first time acting as well. So I wasn't sure on how, because, with first time actors, especially ones who have never done a film before, you're never quite sure, like, if they're going to be able to, keep up, are they able to hold their own in being the leads of a film? But they both just did such a great job here. They are both fantastic performers, and and you can't help but be caught up in their character's journey throughout the course of this film. It's just so compelling, and I was just riveted from beginning to end. Like I said, there are definitely contrivances within the story, like that we have seen in other films before. They didn't really bother me too much, and if anything, I just found the characters really rich and compelling, and just what happens in the story was still compelling enough that the cliches and contrivances really didn't bother me that much. Like, this is a really well done film that's full of great performances, really strong directing from both Keough and Gamble, and it kind of shows that, both great filmmakers. Like, I definitely want to see more of what they can do, whether together or separately. And I gotta say, not only is Riley Keough a great actress, she's also a great filmmaker as well. And just based on her work here, I think she just did a really bang up job. And you could definitely tell they put a lot of love and care into this film to make it feel authentic and in the Oglala Lakota community in crafting and shaping this story, so that they too feel represented in this film. And to me, I just think everyone did such a great job. And yeah, this is definitely one I would say everyone should definitely check out. Like, and like I said, it does have its cliches and contrivances, but it's still pretty compelling stuff from beginning to end. So if I had to give this film a rating, I'd give this one a solid 4 out of 5. Now, on to the fourth and final film for this episode, which of course is the dark comedy Funny Pages. And this one was directed by Owen Klein. And the plot summary for this one, which I am reading off the MIF program guide once more, is as follows. 17 years old and ensconced in suburban comfort, Robert feels creatively stifled. He desperately wants to write and draw comics, but while he's got the skills, he has no life experience. One day, following a traumatic incident, Robert announces to his horrified parents that he is dropping out of school and moving out. Finding lodgings in a dingy basement apartment, he delights in meeting Wallace, an ex-colorist for some of his favorite graphic novels. Will Wallace live up to this idealistic teen's expectations? Or is Robert, about to learn some hard lessons. Now, like a lot of films I've already talked about on this episode, and particularly for most of the films I'm seeing at MIFF this year, one of the big draws I wanted to check this film out is, of course, who was behind this film. Because this film is written and directed by Owen Klein, and this is his directorial debut. And for most people, if that name sounds very familiar, is that Owen Klein used to be a child star. He only appeared in a few things, but he's probably best known for playing Jesse Eisenberg's younger brother in the Noah Baumbach film, The Squid and the Whale. So that's his most prominent role. But of course, you know, his parents happened to also be Academy Award winner Kevin Klein and Phoebe Cates. So he pretty much did the child acting thing for a little bit, like appearing in a few things, but then he kind of just disappeared for a while and then made a couple of short films and has now made his first feature film, which of course is this film, Funny Pages. Now, knowing that he wrote and directed this film and the fact that he managed to also get the Safdie brothers, you know, the makers behind Uncut Gems and Good Time, to be producers on this film, is what made me very intrigued to check this out. And I gotta say though, I really like this film a lot. Like I know a few people who went and saw this film definitely love the film more than I did, but I still really quite enjoyed it nonetheless. Like it is a very funny, very dark, humorous film that has a lot of great quirk and satire to it. And it's a good kind of quirk that didn't really irritate me as much as, you know, other films I've seen in the past have done, particularly indie comedies. Like it has a good right amount of quirkiness, but also has a little bit of an edge to it as well that kind of contrasts it as well. And also it kind of deals with a lot of interesting themes within its story about privilege, about creativity, and also, you know, being young and feeling like you know everything and everyone else is wrong, and you feel, and like this film kind of tackles with so many stuff, with so much stuff, and it's also really well acted as well. Like the film's two main stars, who of course are, and if I butchered their names, please forgive me once again, Daniel Zolhagadri and Matthew Mayer. Again, if I butchered both their names, please forgive me. They're both great in the film. But it's really kind of Daniel Zolhagadri, apologies once again if I butchered your name, who definitely is quite an interesting presence on screen. Like, he gives a really strong performance, and he's a character that you wouldn't find likable at all, but there's definitely a charm to the character that you can't help but feel compelled by. Like, he is definitely a kid who's very sure of himself, even full of himself as well, but he's still a pretty interesting character. And then once he kind of meets Matthew Mayer's character, that's when things kind of get really interesting. And I think their sort of relationship in this film, particularly as it progresses along, is quite interesting. And once it gets to the third act, it gets a little bit dark. Not like dark, but let's just say something happens and things kind of escalate from there. But it's a pretty interesting and compelling film. And I've seen some people kind of compare this film to Kevin Smith's first film, Clerks, which I could definitely see that in this film, particularly because this is a film that has a lot of love to comic books, not really kind of the superhero comic books like from Marvel and DC, but more kind of the old school comic books or comic strips or the funny pages, as they were also called, and also indie and underground comics. So this film is kind of a love letter to those films. And like, I can definitely see some people kind of being put off by this film as well. Like, there's definitely a lot of Safdie brothers influence throughout this entire film. But with acts, while even though this film does have, you know, well-known actors in its cast, it also uses actors who are first-time actors or non-actors in some roles as well. And also, like, the tone of it does feel very Safdie brothers-esque as well. So it doesn't surprise me at all that they came on as producers of this film. So, but that being said though, I still found it a pretty enjoyable film. Like, I found it quite witty, quite clever, has a really interesting bit of satire and a lot of thematic depth to it as well. And there were quite a number of moments throughout that did make me laugh quite a lot as well. I wouldn't say it's a hilarious film, at least for me personally, but I still found it quite a humorous one nonetheless, and it made me chuckle quite a number of times. And if a film makes me laugh at least five times, then I know it's a successful comedy. But that being said, though, even if it didn't really make me laugh that much, there's still a lot of interesting things around the film that I found quite cool as well. And also, I didn't realize this until the end of the movie. An actress who I tend to talk about and also impersonate a lot on the To Be Tuesdays podcast, Louise Lasser, is actually in this film in a small bit part, and I didn't recognize her in the film because, she's a lot older now. So I was very excited that when I saw her name in the credits and then I remembered her scene, I was like, oh, if only I knew that was Louise Lasser. Now that I know, I'm like ex kind of intrigued to check this film out again just to see her scene as well, because it's quite an interesting scene that she appears in. But overall, I really liked Funny Pages. It's definitely not for everyone, because I can definitely see some people hating it as well. But for the most part, I really dug it a lot. I was able to go on its wavelength, and I think that's kind of what it is at the end of the day. If you're able to go on its wavelength, I think you'll find some enjoyment and laughs from it as well. So if I had to give this film a rating, I give it a solid 3.5 out of 5. It's a pretty solid debut for Owen Klein. It's well directed, well acted, well written, and it's definitely a good solid calling card for him as a filmmaker. And I'm definitely curious to see what he does after this. So yeah, that's the end of this second edition of my 2022 MIF audio reviews. I hope you guys all enjoyed them, and apologies if I tend to ramble quite a lot through these audio reviews. Pretty much these ones are off the cuff, unedited, and just me just kind of spewing my thoughts on all these films. So apologies if I do ramble up, but yeah, I just have a lot to say about all these films. So, but I tried to make them at least coherent as possible. But I'll try to be even more so as the next couple of episodes drop as the film festival is still going. But yeah, once again, thank you very much for listening to this one, and keep a lookout very soon for my third edition, in which I will review the films Lynch Oz, The Afterlife, Rodeo, and Close. So keep a lookout for that, and I'll see you all later. See everyone. Bye.